then you would die. Then, by the time the Selga reps have arrived, their full component, then we'll be able to continue with that business. Is that in order, members?
I was just shocked that the business of the citizenship has been changed. Now, I was shocked and I was looking at you. I thought there was an erroneous assertion there. But yeah, that's why.
No, thanks. I was making sure that we are all awake and you have shown that you are also awake. I've also welcomed our new member from the DA to once again welcome you. You are welcome, ma'am. And we did send our message to the DA via the DA to Mrs. Terblanche, wishing a speedy recovery. We all heard that she had a tumor. So she's in the process of recovering from that. But welcome. Good folks, we are in your able hands.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just quickly go through the amendments. To do that, we need to have all the three pieces of legislation here. The Bill 17, the original bill, as introduced. Then in the A bill, where the amendments are. And then the B bill, where the amendments then are effected. So the first amendment is in clause 2 on the bill as introduced, is on page 4.
I will beg your indulgence. If you could kindly just show the members which ones you'll be, so that they can follow you. They are giving me a very perplexed look. I could follow you, but just for showing them.
Chair, what we also can do is just look at the B bill.
Yeah.
Okay. Then if we have bill 17B.
There's this bill, good folks, B17. So we've all got that. If you look at the small print there, there's somewhere where it says B17. You've got that one. Like the Americans said when they caught Saddam, poor Saddam. We've caught him. Pulled him out of a hole like a rat. We are in your able hands.
I think that if you look at Bill 17B, on its front page it says amended by the Portfolio Committee. If you look at that one, rather than the A bill, I think that would be easier, because that is the bill that will be then forwarded to the next house. On page 4 of that bill, clause 2, used to have a subsection 2, no person shall be a South African citizen by virtue of subsection 1B if at any time, if at the time of his or, birth, his or her birth, one of his or her parents had not been admitted to the Republic for permanent residence therein, was his or other parent was not a South African citizen. That has now been omitted in the B list, it's not there anymore. Clause 2 is now any person born in the Republic, etc. But then there is also then a consequential amendment. It used to refer to subsection 2, but it's now referring to subsection 1 in line 49 on page 4. Also on page 4, at the bottom, line 56, there's insertion after Republic. The first part of subsection 3 reads as follows. Any person born in the Republic of parents who have been admitted into the Republic, and in new words, for permanent residence, and who is not a South African citizen, qualifies to be a South African citizen by birth, if, etc. That is the And then the last amendment that we'll do is on the next page, page 5. It is
now when you are you with us? This. There's a two pager.
There will be problems because we've dealt with this already. Now, you don't want to agree to small amendments which have serious consequential changes which may affect the entire bill. So if the member would actually go very slow, if he can, and even repeat what he started to say, so that he takes us with him along, you know. I'm sure we are listening very carefully, but we're not following this. We're not keeping up with the speed as it does.
Okay, thanks, good folks. You remember, we have all walked this road together. We agreed on everything. What we are doing here now is just to clean up the last changes that we all agreed on, is taking us through that. So if you could kindly just slow down the pace a bit, take us along, so that you have all your members with you. I'm going to put a 60 speed limit. I know you are driving a Porsche, can move to 280 or whatever, but you are in a 60 zone. Thank you, sir.
Okay, sorry, I was planning for the 5 minutes, but...
My apologies. I put you on a racetrack.
I think it would be easier if we remember there's three pieces of legislation now. The first one has got Bill 17, as introduced in the National Assembly. That is the one that was looked at first. Then the second one...
I'll just say that the committee clerk just reminds me that they don't have the original one. They just have the B1 and the other ones, but the old one has not been circulated today. But you can speak to it, remind us what's there, and continue.
Thank you, Chair. Then the short one, the A bill, there is the instructions what must happen to the original bill. And the first amendment is to clause 2. And then we say on page 4 from line 48 to omit subsection 2. Now that subsection has now been omitted. If you look at the bill then, as amended by the Portfolio Committee, the long bill, on page 4, that the old subsection 2 is not there anymore. I'm sorry, members will have to take my word for that if you don't know the original one, but the second amendment then is that to say that in the old subsection 3, the reference to subsection 2 must now be changed to reference to subsection 1. So on page 4 of the B bill, in line 49, the lines are at the right-hand side. You will see there's numbers now. If you go to line 49, you will see the subsection 2 has been changed. It's now subsection 1. That was the second amendment. And then the third amendment was in line 56. We, after the public, we inserted the words for permanent residence. So I've read that amendment. So it reads now, any person born in the Republic of parents who have been admitted into the Republic for permanent residence was inserted. So that was the third one. The fourth amendment we find on the Bible on line 5, up on page 5. What we did there was to bring this consistent with clause 4, the words. So the A, paragraph A on top, in line 1, reads, he or she has lived in the Republic from the date of his or her birth to the date of becoming a major. So those words are now harmonized. Then the next amendment.
I'm terribly sorry.
I was not aware that this was on the agenda. I don't know if many members were that this was on the agenda, so it didn't bring the original documentation. So what we have in front of us is what was handed out, and that's the 17B version. So it's becoming very difficult to, well, impossible. So I wonder if at least we could get an explanation, perhaps, of, you know, the context, why the change has been made or whatever. But we simply don't, a good number of us don't have the documentation in front of us.
The issue is that we have discussed this. So most members will have the background. But the only difficulty that we have right now, we don't have the original that we corrected. What we do have, the B, is incorporating all the corrections that were made. And then you're speaking to the B bill with the corrections and the two pages. The one that says 17-2010 as agreed to by the portfolio committee. So this is a précis or summary of amendments effected in the Bible, this copy that we have here.
I wonder then, thank you, I understand that. I wonder then if reference could be made to the Bible instead of the original act. Because the reference is being made to the pages, as I understand it, in the original act and not in the Bible.
No, Chair, I was referring to the Bible on page 5, the amendment to, last amendment to clause 2, that is on the Bible, it's on top of page 5. Chair, what I understand is that the committee already agreed to these amendments. This is just to make sure that there's no mistakes in the Able and the Bible as it's going to be taken forward. So that was our thought, just explaining where the amendments are. So, should I go?
Please continue.
Then on page, clause 4, Chair, was the next set of amendments. Clause 4 on the Bible is page 5. There was a mistake in line 3 and 34, in paragraph 3b of that section 4, the clause 4. There was a wrong reference to the Birth and Death Registration Act. It referred to 2002, it should have been 1992. So it's just corrected so that it reads now the Birth and Death Registration Act 1992, brackets Act number 51 of 1992, close brackets. So that is just a technical correction. And then the last amendment that was agreed to is in clause 6. And that is on the Bible, page 6. And that is in line 40. That is just to correct the department's suggestion that to make clear that we refer to a war, that insert a comma after war and after country in that line. He or she engages in a war, comma, under the flag of a country, comma. That was just the insertion, and that is all the amendments, Chair.
Thank you. The department. Would you like to comment, sir?
You know, we're in agreement. Basically, what's been said, those are all amendments. We checked that it is in line with what was agreed last time, Chairperson. So they have been correctly amended in the Bible, reflected in the Bible. Thanks, Chair.
Members, the last time we went through all those bills, so this is the corrections that we have effected. So this exercise was just to rectify what you had corrected on the day, to ensure that all your corrections are captured in what will be this people. Honorable Member,
Chairperson, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I will tell you where the confusion came. Is that the member obviously has not been with us in the processes dealing with this. And we're helping each other as we're sitting here. But it does not take away the fact that all of us have not been given the privilege to have this document prior to coming to this committee meeting today. However, some of the changes, these are not changes that are new. This is something that we dealt with at that meeting where we voted and agreed and some where there were reservations, and I know that you'll understand this one was one of the contentious ones where I have some reservations, very serious ones. Now, also there is an omission where the presenter is saying line 42. In terms of the BBL, it's not line 42, it's line 40. So you know there are some little confusion as go around, but it's line 40, and then you still remain with the argument or the submission. The last part, Chair, is that the submission that he's making is...
I just want to...
Just on that point in regard to line 40, I just want you to capture that and make sure that that's indeed we are reading from
yes.
the same page.
Of course, the line 42 in the A bill, it refers to the original bill that was introduced, that these are instructions to the reader, to the printer, that in the bill that was introduced in page 6 in line 42, to omit certain words and to insert those words, but as a result of the omission previously of the subsection 1, the pages, after lines have shifted, so in the B bill, it's not 42 anymore, it's now in line 40. That is, so the short bill, the A bill, refers to the original bill that was introduced.
No, that's fine. There's an explanation for that. So the other point...
So those are very technicalities that make confusion. To members. Chair, as you know, while she was talking, it disturbed me now. But I wanted to say that the
just take a deep breath, relax. It will come back.
The wording, as it stands, remains. Because what happens is that the impression was that there are some changes that will be effected after what we are reading before us. But the current insertion that he spoke to is already on this particular B document. And it was explained to us that it's simply the commas and whatever, and it does appear that it's simply the commas, it does not change the content of that particular clause. So I am happy with the fact that we still have the same as it stands. But I will talk to you after the committee so that tomorrow we don't have to, if we debate this bill, we don't have people that vote against or whatever. I think there are some things that we can agree to, you know, as a committee. We've been working very well.
Member, you are helping us think that after this meeting, we'll have some bilateral. So we'll discuss whatever you need to raise. Suffice to say that I'll also find out or try and inform members at the earliest opportunity to get certainty as to if the debate will take place on Thursday or if it will take place next week. But we'll communicate as early as possible. Let's have certainty. So we'll check. In all probability, if there are no plenaries next week, then it will have to be Thursday. Shall we move, good folks, in regard to this? So in regard to the citizenship amendment bill, it has been cleaned out as to our agreements. Could we kindly go to the births and deaths registration amendment bill?
Okay.
Yes.
Sorry, I don't wish to delay you at all, and nor do I wish to be out of order, and please rule me out of order if you feel that I am. But you've used the word as per our agreements. Your committee may have agreed we do have serious reservations. Just for an example, the Department of Foreign Affairs does not maintain a database, as far as I know, of countries that this government does not support. So having something like fighting under the flag, I'm out of order.
Honourable Member, you're out of order.
Okay.
But may I just indulge you and say that your colleague on your left did raise the reservations and concerns. So we'll be rehashing that and going over ground that we have traversed. It's not in our interest and time to do so right now. So that has been noted. Shall we, births, deaths, registration amendment bill?
Thank you, Chairperson. We will follow the same form that was taken before. The only thing is that this is only was only one word that was changed in terms of the birth and death. That was in page 5, honourable members of the BP, and the last sentence or sub clause or section. That is a subsection 5 in clause 8. Members will recall that in the previous original bill, that read as no person other than the persons contemplated in subsection 2 shall engage in the activities relating to the registration of death in terms of that act. The department felt that might cause a confusion because it talks about no persons other than, it must just relate to the funeral undertakers, because in terms of the schemes of the act, there were other people like family members and relatives that are allowed to register death. So the person there, as you can see in terms of the two-pager, that is A, the amendment is agreed by the committee. We omitted person and we substituted person by funeral undertaker so that that person can be specific to only funeral undertaker, that no funeral undertaker than those that has been registered and designated as such can register that in terms of this act. That is all in terms of this act. That was suggested by the department and agreed to by the committee. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, members. That's an accurate recollection of the work that we traversed in regard to this. That was the word from the State Law Advisors Department.
Chair, thank you very much. That is indeed correct, and it has been correctly reflected in the people. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Advocate. Honourable members, you recall we had a very entertaining time dealing with funeral undertakers, price of coffins, and the like. So that's accurate reflection of the work that we have done, so we can pass this. Thanks, Honourable members. I would now like to go to our public hearing. We have with us a delegation from SELGA. Is it possible to have some musical chairs, assist them to be close to each other, because it seems the one is on the other end of the room and the other, unless they are gifted with telepathy. How many are you? Three?
Two.
If I could kindly ask you, Advocate, if you could kindly move to accommodate SELGA. He's crossing the floor. How many times has he crossed it, Mr. Hendricks?
Okay.
I won't repeat what the Honourable Dr. Buthelezi aptly called prostitutes.
Yeah.
Good folks, we are in your ambulance. Kindly take us through your presentation.
Can I just, by way of introduction, state that I'm from the Western Cape Executive and I represent today the National Executive. And thank you for the opportunity. It's a very short presentation.
If you could also kindly just tell us your name, sir.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I missed the most important thing. Niels de Bruin, and I'm a councillor of the Cape Winelands. that's where I hail from, and the person right to me is Ruben. Ruben is acting executive director. Acting executive director, and he's been a very able person in terms of helping us with this sort of legislation and concept legislation. So he will be doing the couple of points that we've got. There is something I would just like to very shortly indicate, and that is that obviously SALGA represents local authorities, and local authorities has become the most important, I think. Well, it would be very, very presumptuous of me to say that, but it has become, due to the present situation in South Africa, so a local government has become more and more important by the day. And I think that in terms of the election processes, and we don't know what's going to happen in another 5 years' time, especially with your regional councils or your district municipalities, and even, if I may put it, I think there's even people attaching provinces to that. So there's still a heck of a lot of work to be done before the next municipal election or the next national election. But in the interim, we sit with an election date for next year, and as you know, it's going to be very, very important. I would like to just emphasize the fact that in future, if possible, and I know that committees such as this is inundated with requests, that we be respectfully asked that we be afforded more time. More time in terms of as soon as the act and something is available, that should be provided to SALGA, and SALGA will then come with comments. Because we've got a constituency is the whole South Africa. And you can appreciate to get participation from the local authorities, it's not always that easy. But thank you very much for this opportunity, and we are here, and I think Ruben would like to take you through the comments, and I think most of them, those comments that I've had the privilege of reading through, is very valid. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, sir. And I'm not sure, Mr. Ruben, if that's the surname or that's the first name. You'll kindly provide us with what it is. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, thank you, Councillor De Bruin. It's Advocate Ruben Baikis from the National Office of SALGA, Acting Executive Director for Governance, Intergovernmental Relations, as well as International Relations. My apologies for delaying the meeting this morning. My flight was a bit late. And I'll take you through briefly some of the comments, as the Council indicated, that we have, but also dealing firstly with, I think, a couple of key principles around participation in the lawmaking process, and particularly what the Constitution provides in that respect, and some of the provisions that we feel have been compromised in this process. Now, starting off, as Councillor De Bruin indicated, one of the major innovations of the 96 Constitution was the elevation of local government to a sphere of government from a tier, making it an integral part of the constitutional enterprise of providing services to our people. Now, one of the most significant features in our view of that new local government system is decentralized representation of voters. It establishes the principle of local decision-making by locally elected representatives. Now, the Structures Act, together with the Municipal Electoral Act, lays the foundation, of course, for the electoral system of government. And that act must be administered by the IEC in a manner conducive to free and fair elections. Now, of course, the IEC status is well known and exercises public powers and performs functions in terms of the Constitution, and is therefore an organ of state, as defined in the Constitution. But while independent, it is, of course, also subject to the Constitution and the law. Now, as far as organized local government is concerned, Councillor De Bruin touched on this to some extent, but we would like to clarify again, what the Constitution provides in this respect. For a large number of municipalities, such that we have 283 at present, to participate effectively in the system of cooperative government that we have, we must act as a collective to make the voice of local government heard in the national and provincial structures such as Parliament, for example, and our position in the NCLP that we occupy as well. So to that end, the Constitution recognized and entrenched the need for organized local government Association, a voluntary body representing all nine provincial associations, was established in 1996. Now, municipalities and organized local government, and I'll get to these specific provisions a bit later on, but the principle there is that municipalities and organized local government in particular must be given an opportunity to make representations on draft legislation affecting local government in order to, amongst other things, prevent municipalities from being burdened with unreasonable planning requirements where there is planning involved. And undoubtedly, this is the case in an electoral bill, for example. So, accordingly, an organ of state or any other initiating national or provincial legislation requiring municipalities to comply with planning of whatever nature requirements must consult with organized local government before the legislation is introduced in Parliament or the provincial legislatures. And that's the key principle here. Now, the importance of prior consultation, in our view, perhaps the most vital one, for cooperative government certainly, is consultation before an organ of state takes action. Prior consultation should ensure that the exercise of a sphere's autonomous powers, or organ of state's powers, is done with the full knowledge of the interests of all concerned and not only with the narrow interests of that actor in mind. So consultation, to our mind, is thus not an end in itself, but a means toward better decision-making that takes cognizance of other interests as well. So overall, to us, early consultation and communication is an essential element in preventing disputes arising from ignorance. And I indicate that, some of the comments that we have on the body itself, some members may say, well, it is, this is the position or that is the position, and that is the point precisely. If we have early consultation and communication, then those kind of disputes can be avoided from us looking for the first time at the bowl and now indicating things which may be clear to everyone else. Now, the constitutional obligation that we draw upon quite considerably, Chairperson, as a serious matter, is that Section 154(2) of the Constitution provides that draft national and provincial legislation that affects the status, institutions, powers, or functions of local government must be published for public comment before it is introduced in Parliament or a provincial legislature in a manner that allows organized local government an opportunity to make representations with regard to the draft legislation. Now, we wish to record that despite the bill undoubtedly having that direct impact on local government, SALGA, as the legally recognized institution representing the sphere, was not consulted on the said bill in draft form. As the national organization representing municipalities, as I indicated, we must be consulted on matters affecting local government as a fundamental constitutional principle. The memorandum on the objects of the bill, in fact, states that no institutions have been consulted. I quote, no institutions have been consulted in the process of drafting the bill, despite the fact that it directly relates to Section 157 of the Constitution concerning the institutions of municipalities. This is in direct contravention, in our view, of Section 154(2) of the Constitution. It is therefore our submission that the bill has been unlawfully entered into the parliamentary process. Now, on the technical aspects, that is with regard to the principle that we wanted to deal with as first course. But on the bill itself, we still have some preliminary comments, and as the council indicated, the reason we hop on about this consultation is because it takes such a long time for us to consult our membership. Nine provincial associations, 283 municipalities. In total, it takes 8 weeks for SALGA to garner comments on legislation from its members and consequently from communities of those municipalities. And that's why we open. So these few technical comments that we make are really from one or two people in the national office, our lawyers, who have picked up some of these concerns, but it is not the views of our municipalities. Because they have not been consulted at all. There was no time to do that. So notwithstanding, we will submit a few technical comments for your consideration as well. Now, as I indicated, we have not had the opportunity to garner extensive comments. Now, I will refer to sections of the bill and it is the bill in its current form, not the original legislation. Section 1, it is proposed that the bill be amended there to provide a time frame within which the election timetable must be published after the date of an election has been announced. So after the minister declares the date of the election, we're proposing that there must be a time frame within which the election timetable must be published. This will ensure that all interested parties are aware of the relevant dates as soon as possible after the announcement of the date of the election, and in order for stakeholders to do the necessary planning, which I've already indicated previously. And then, Chair, you will indulge me, this is quite a lengthy concern, this one, so there's quite a number of sections that are put consecutively and then state what the problem is with those. Now, the proposed amended section 64, this is now section 9 of the bill, which proposes to amend section 64, provides as follows. 64.1, on receipt of all the results of the count in respect of all ballots conducted at the voting stations within the municipality, the Commission must A. determine the result of the election, B. record the result, and C. declare the result in public. However, section 26 of the Local Government Municipal Structures Act provides as follows in subsection 2. A person assumes office as a councillor when declared elected or when appointed, as the case may be. Now, section 13, part 3 of schedule 1 of the said act, which deals with proportional representative elections for metros and local municipalities, provides, amongst others, that in subsection 5, the Electoral Commission must determine which party candidates are elected by selecting from the party's list, in accordance with the party's order of preference, the number of candidates that is equal to the number of seats, beginning with the first candidate and ending with the lowest ranking candidate. Now, section 7, part 1 of schedule 2, dealing with proportional elections for district councils, provides, amongst others, that in subsection 4, the chief electoral officer must determine which party candidates are elected by selecting from the party's list, in accordance with the party's order of preference, the number of candidates that is equal to the number of seats to which the party is entitled, beginning with the first and ending with the lowest ranking candidate. So, section 14, part 2 of schedule 2, dealing with the allocation of representatives of local councils to district councils, provides that the section 23, two members of a district council must be appointed by the councils of the local municipalities in the area of the district council from among the members. Section 16, part 2 of schedule 2 provides as well that the chief electoral officer must manage the election of representatives of the local council to the district council. Now, the key issue here is that reading those relevant pieces of legislation that I've just quoted, some municipalities have expressed continual concern that it is not clear when a councillor assumes office and becomes entitled to remuneration. As the declaration of the results in terms of the legislation quoted above does not coincide with the declaration of results in terms of Section 64. In addition, in certain instances, the schedules refers to the Commission determining the elected representatives, and certain instances, the Chief Electoral Officer, which cast doubt on the process involved in the determination, not the outcome. Section 64 should therefore indicate if the declaration of the results include the determination of seats in accordance with the proportional system. So there is that uncertainty which has prevailed for some time in local government on when exactly the determination of seats in relation to proportional system and the declaration of results and where those coincide, and in fact that they do not. Chair, that was very briefly what we could pick up in the time we had available, but our ultimate submission is on the first few slides that I dealt with around the principle of consultation in our view, and Section 154.2 of the Constitution not being adhered to in this particular instance. In our view, then, our ultimate submission is that it is unlawful at worst and unacceptable at best in the new constitutional dispensation that legislation that has a direct bearing on local government can state that no institutions have been consulted in the process of drafting this bill, contrary to the Section 154(2) of the Constitution. It resembles a pre-94 legislation wherein narrow interests were advanced at the expense of the local populace. This approach to legislative development defeats the entire essence of our constitutional system relating to local government and the importance of the sphere of government in the country as representing the voice of the citizens. Notwithstanding those few technical comments, Chair, we respectfully request that in view of the importance of the legislation in the democratic local government era, the bill be withdrawn and a proper consultation process with local government be embarked upon. Organized local government has been created to ensure that never again is the local voice unheard in policy and legislative development. And we trust sincerely that in the spirit of our constitution, our position will be considered by the Honorable House and the appropriate action be taken to ensure that this bill in fact assists in successful 2010-2011 local government elections, the third such democratic elections. We thank you, Chief.
We thank you for your input, gentlemen, previous speaker and advocate. When we commenced this process, we commenced with a presentation by the Independent Electoral Commission. I see that we do have representation from the Electoral Commission. For clarity of the House, I would be interested in your views. We can't deny that SELGA has direct interest and responsibility with regard to the sphere of local government. I would have assumed that there would have been consultation between the two parties in view of the importance of this amendment to facilitate local government elections even more efficiently and better next year. So the IEC has time constraints. Everybody wants this amendment to go through the cycle of parliament. It's not the beginning or the end. It cycles through the National Assembly. It also has to be dealt with by the National Council of Provinces. So there are those real-time constraints. If we are to effect the necessary changes to remedy shortfalls in the interests of local government, there's also the reality of the parliamentary cycle. So just for context, I would be interested to hear the views from the Independent Electoral Commission or the Electoral Commission. Thereafter, I'll avail the opportunity to members. So, Commission, and then Legal Advisors Department, the Parliamentary Law Advisor, he or she is like that bird of Noah that went to look for dry land and was never seen again. So I hope one day he or she will come back, all is forgiven, so that we also have the input of a parliamentary legal advisor. Right now we have departmental legal advisors and state law advisors, but there is need for input now and then from the parliamentary legal advisor. They have said that they are stretched. They don't have sufficient staff, but if Parliament is to carry out its functions as it should, we should have the legal input from that court as well, you see. We can't be expected to produce quality pieces of legislation if we can't have all the necessary input and advice. Because, as we all know, lawyers are gifted with more than four hands, on the one hand, on the other, on the third hand, on the fourth hand. So we need all those hands. Good folks from the Independent Commission.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Fani van der Merwe. I'm a member of the Electoral Commission.
Welcome again, sir.
Sir, if we look at the written submission, we see that in the third paragraph, section 1542 of the Constitution is referred to, and that is also the basis on which advocate, I've now forgotten, I'm sorry, I've forgotten the advocate that argument is that there should have been, the bill should have been published before it was introduced. That is a constitutional matter, sir, normally dealt with by the state law advisors. We don't introduce legislation in Parliament, the Minister introduces the legislation. And I can just, if it can be of assistance, say to you, sir, that according to our view of the bill itself, the bill does not contain any matter or any legislation that affects the status, institutions, powers, or functions of local government. It does not contain anything in that direction. And if you look at the memorandum, at the end of the bill, there's also the state law advisors, parliamentary law advisors, state law advisors, are of the opinion that the bill must be dealt with in terms of section 75, which is also a procedure that is followed when none of the status, institution, powers or functions of local government is touched upon. So if for whatever it may be, whatever assistance it may be, I'm just stating the fact that according to our view, none of these are dealt with or are affected in the bill itself. Chairperson, on the specific provisions of the Act, there is the comment on Section 1 proposing that a time should be set, the time frame within the timetable must be published. It will be very difficult to set a time because when we the minister in this case, or the president in the case of national legislation, consult with the IEC on when to determine or when to publish or when to announce the date of the election, promulgate the date of the election, and therefore we know in advance when this is going to happen, and according to that then we also determine or try to publish the time frame in good time for everything to happen in accordance to the time frame of the timetable. I don't think it'll be helpful to now introduce a specific date within which we must publish, but if anybody feels that it's appropriate, we can do so, but I don't think it'll be helpful. For the rest of the matters dealt with in this submission, sir, there's nothing that I can find that pertains to this bill at all, to the electoral bill at all, municipal electoral bill at all. It touches upon matters that should, if it has needs attention, it should be dealt with in the Constitution or in the Structures Act, the Municipal Structures Act. There's nothing that affects this bill at all. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, sir. Department, any further comments?
Chair, thank you very much. Yes, we just want to echo what Mr. van der Merwe has also said. Our understanding is obviously that this bill does not affect the status, institutions, powers and functions of local government, and as correctly stated, this is dealt with in your Local Government Municipal Structures Act, is our view, of 1998, Act number 117 of 1998. So in this regard, the premise that we should have adhered to section 154, subsection 2 of the Constitution, in our view, does not come into play. in this regard regarding consultation that had to take place. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Advocate. You know what would have made this matter easier? If the two parties had just consulted. The Commission, your main stakeholder, just communicate, and also SELGA, just to interact with the Department. We have read this in the paper, this is your intention, these are the reservations that we have. Then the parties can engage in this. But it's just a bit disconcerting that we don't communicate at that level. We should communicate with your main stakeholders, ensure that there's buy-in, even if there isn't agreement, but there's consultation. Then lawyers could have discussed the various interpretations of the relevant laws and where policy interventions are needed. Obviously, that's the domain of government. If there are material defects seen in the Constitution, highlight this and the people with the necessary powers to give attention to those. The various municipal acts structures where we see there isn't synergy, the broader issues. Members, comments, questions. I'll start with the first end that I saw, Honorable Masizole.
Sorry, thank you, Chair. I'm happy that Mr. van der Merwe pointed out to the objects of the bill, because it's very, very important. But I'm not going to enter into a bun fight with the legal funds. I cannot even attempt to do that. But my view is that SALGA has taken it unto themselves to make submissions before us, hence we are here. So our interest should above all supersede the reservations that they have, but deal with the submission that they've made to the committee. And I think that is what we are here for. If there are any other issues, there are relevant platforms under which those submissions or references should be made. Otherwise, we'll be dragged into a discussion that is outside the terrain and the mandate of this committee, as before, as it states before us in terms of the submission. Of course, the submission that they made verbally, but I think what comes to satisfaction is how the departmental law advisor and the IEC response. I think there's that room which they can also engage with SALGA. But I would suggest that we move and deal with the submission that's before us. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Member. The following member that I saw, Honorable Member. It's difficult to forget your name.
I know.
Love more. There'd be peace in this world if you knew how to love more.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to clarify, in terms of, I know it's not in the SALGA presentation, but I just want to clarify the public participation side of, or the consultation side of things. In terms of section 41.1H, it's in the chapter of the Constitution. It's in the chapter on cooperative government. And it says that all spheres of government and all organs of state within each sphere must, inter alia, cooperate with one another in mutual trust and good faith by, and then H3 is informing one another of and consulting one another on matters of common interest. And I'm just interested particularly in, I'm not sure
is it the Department of Home Affairs law advisor, on his comments on that, and whether that would have required consultation. So the request by Salga is a serious one, and that's the withdrawal of the bill. So, yeah, his comments would be welcome.
Honourable Lovemore, I thank you for your comments. Honourable Balindle.
Chair, you have already paved the way for the stakeholders when you introduced one issue that we always ask in the committees, whether the left knows what the right is doing. And I think you paved it in the sense that you were saying maybe they need to sit down, and if they sit down, they could spare us from some of this. Why don't we put it in action and allow them and give them this chance now that they are here to do exactly what you are saying, sit down and talk about it?
Honourable Member, whilst that's a noble idea, but if they are going to sit down and talk, we'll be passengers, we'll be listening, time will be moving. They should do that. But today, right now, it's not possible to do so. I'm sure that both parties realize the potent of what we have said, and they will address that. But the issue right now, as the Honorable Masizole correctly pointed out, is that we have a submission in front of us, and I would like members to engage with that submission. In fact, what's the correct English word, not the Latin word, the nub of the submission is that Serga would like us to suspend further engagement with this, and there are serious consequences there also for local government next year if we have to go down that route. You would not be able to have all the provisions in place that the amendment seeks to put in front of us. So I'd just like members to look at the submission, comments, questions in regard to the submissions made by Serga. And then I've noted your hand. I'll give you the opportunity to respond. Perhaps before we go down further, if the department would like to respond to the question and comments made by the Honourable Ms. Lovemore.
Chair, thank you very much. First of all, I would also want to invite the IEC just to indicate what happened to in the process before the bill, what engagements there were, because the department wasn't privy to those engagements. But if one turns to Section 41 of the Constitution, and specifically subsection 1 says all spheres of government and all organs of state within each sphere must, and then the consultation cooperate, etc. The question is whether SAGA is an organ of state. At this point, we're not of the view that that is the case. However, I mean, obviously, as Chair's indicated, I think consultation will be a good thing. That's the reason for me saying what happened prior to finalising the bill between SAGA, were they consulted, were they not consulted, etc. But I just wanted to indicate that the organ of state as in the sphere as we see it, Chairperson. Thanks.
Advocate, thank you very much. Perhaps just a direct response to Advocate Erasmus's request that the Independent Electoral Commission gives us that background. And then I'll avail the opportunity to the delegation from Serga. to make a further input. But I'll start with Mr. Van der Merwe. Thank you, sir.
Jefferson, when we, how we come get to a bill like this, more or less the following. In Section 5 of the Commission Act, we are, one of our functions is to constantly review electoral legislation and to make recommendations in that respect. So after every election, for instance, we will have debriefing sessions with all interested parties about to see what went right in that election, what went wrong, and whether there are any areas in the acts that need to be attended to and need to be rectified. And then also we receive from time to time, we receive from people that are interested or parties that are interested or institutions that are interested, we receive recommendations on amendments that should be affected to the Act. After the last local government elections in 2006, we had such debriefing sessions. We also had such debriefing sessions after the national elections last time. And we then entered into a work program in which we took everything that was on our table and we tried to work out what we should put into, what we should recommend in respect of amendment to the legislation. These we passed through several times through the National Party Liaison Committees. That is our main source of consultation with representatives of the people. Thereafter, Chairperson, we then made recommendations by way of a draft bill, and we submitted it to the Minister of Home Affairs with our recommendations on what she should consider to put before Cabinet. And then, of course, it goes to Parliament through the Minister. I don't know if in any event we have ever received any recommendations from SELGA, Chairperson. I don't know. We might have received recommendations or suggestions. I don't know. But we didn't pass our draft bill, our draft recommendations to SELGA and consulted SELGA on that. I think in that sense, SELGA is represented in the Council of Provinces. I didn't think it occurred to us to now specifically go to pass this bill to SELGA and to ask for their recommendation. No, sir, we didn't do that. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Van der Merwe. We are in your able answer. If you could kindly remind me of your surname. I forgot your surname.
Niels de Bruin.
Meneer de Bruin.
Can I just reiterate that we're not here to try and form a stumbling block in terms of legal or whatever is needed for the country as a whole. This is not the idea. The idea is that to sharpen just our own tools and to make sure that we do talk on the same page. And the same page for us is that we are representing local government. And whether it's and not recognized by anybody as an institution, SELGA, it is an institution with legal acknowledgement in terms of the Constitution. It represents organized local government. And the what we're saying is we're not going to say, now come back, it's just a way of expressing the seriousness of this whole thing, that we can sit with the situation. I don't think there will ever be a constitutional challenge on this, but should there be, it can be very good grounds for coming to a decision that this can be unconstitutional. And I don't think for all, at all, that we've had very, very good, if I say we, mostly us in individual capacities, has had very, very good negotiations with the Electoral Commission. And in terms of an election, it's very important that you do have those, because we've got electional committees and that. But there are certain things, and some of these are in terms of
of the old act that it's not addressed already. And then I think, like Mr. Van der Merwe has indicated, you must constantly. And I think that if that is the case and we must constantly do it, then there must be interaction from the start. If there's going to be a review, then all parties should be involved. And I don't think we want to make a point other than that. I think, Mr. Chairman, I haven't got the mandate now to talk about that, but I think, and I will go back to my constituency and tell them this has been a very fruitful, but we do realise that we must carry on. And this is a very important election coming up. And thank you for that, and on behalf of myself, thank you, Advocate Bankies, as well, so that we could come and see you, and you know there are faces of Salka somewhere around. Thank you very much for that.
Mr. De Bruin, we're indebted to you, Advocate Bankies.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I concur fully with my counsellor, and I think he clearly indicated the intention was not to provide a stumbling block. But it is long been the position in Parliament as well as the NCLP, myself has had to fight almost on a weekly basis with members and institutions as a whole who do not understand what the organization is all about. And people saying that it's not an organ of state, it clearly is recognized in the Constitution. And 154.2 was created to ensure that local government is consulted prior to the development of draft legislation, or when legislation is in draft form. And I think perhaps if we could assist for future purpose to say that it is problematic from a legal perspective, as the Councillor indicates constitutionally, from a legal perspective to say that this bill does not fall under 154.2. It deals with elections at local government level. That fundamentally deals with institutions of local government. You're nominating councillors, you're electing councillors. That, you know, there are legal arguments that can be made that affects the institutions of local government. I'm not going to go into that. That is not the purpose. But I could certainly develop some sound legal arguments in a constitutional court battle if that would be needed. But that is not our intention. I think we want to assert that, you know, we must be consulted when this kind of legislation is developed. And certainly we would encourage the House as well to ensure that in future when such legislation arises that indeed SELGA has been consulted. And we would be willing to engage with the IEC further in the draft form to ensure that indeed some of the questions that we have raised are clarified and that the elections in 2011 run smoothly. That is the ultimate purpose. But it is to ensure that SELGA as an institution is taken seriously and local government is taken seriously. Thank you, Chair.
Gentlemen and Advocate Bankies, I'm sure you have put up a good fight for your being recognized. And I'm sure that the Independent Electoral Commission, we have had very good relations and sound interaction with them. And everybody who has come to us would realize that we have always placed a high premium on stakeholder involvement in everything that we do. So from the side of the portfolio committee, we can only encourage that type of interaction. And I'm sure after this, it will take place. We will always seek to encourage that. We have had very sound working relationships with the Electoral Commission, and I'm sure we'll also build the same with SERGA, because we have said so in this portfolio committee before that whilst we have different responsibilities, some people are given the responsibility of forming laws in Parliament. Others are given the responsibility of carrying out those laws in different formations. But there are also the people who have the responsibility of seeing that the interests of stakeholders are also protected enhanced. So this compact, all the various people coming together with the common purpose of seeking to discuss, debate, but at the end of the day, formulate laws that are in the best interests of all South African citizens. So this is what brings us all together from different sides of this round table. At the end of the day, the product that we leave South Africans with is the best that we could produce under the objective conditions at that material time in our history. So as long as we all keep sight of that common objective to do the best for our people, then we can debate constructively in pursuance of that program. So this is what we're about, and I'm sure this is how we'll go forward with this matter. But having said that, I've seen the hand of Ms. Lovemore. Lovemore?
Thank you, Chair. Just a point of clarity. In the SALGA submission, page one, the heading is context. And it describes really the fact that councillors must be of a certain calibre. And it says this aspect needs to be addressed in the nomination process for candidates. I mean, I couldn't agree more, but it's not contained within the amendment bill. So I'm just trying to understand why this is forming part of the submission of SALGA. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Lovemore. In Afrikaans, meer liefde, love me. Advocate Baikis or Meneer De Bruin, I'm not sure who's going to take it.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Now, if I can indicate as well the context of this, and that's why I left it out of my own presentation as well. This came as a result, this is something that we feel should be included in legislation. And it's a point of lobbying to say that the overall context of elections, there should be, in the nomination process, that this should be accommodated. That's something that should be borne in mind that we are lobbying for, also with the COCTA department. But it is not something that we are pressing to be included necessarily in the bill, because that would, of course, require political action as well. But it's something that we wanted to raise, just as a broad context covering the elections issue. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Advocate. Good folks, it seems that we have traversed down this road as far as possible today. We have interacted with stakeholder, listened to the input made, and I think we are all agreed with more vibrant consultation to strengthen the laws that we make. So what will happen is that we've had our public hearing on this issue. So the next time we meet as this portfolio committee will just be to deliberate on the relevant amendments, conclude on them, and pass the ball over to the National Council of Provinces to deal with this issue. Honorable Member?
Using the privilege that the SALGA is here present and they have made the submission, I just need to get an understanding of the submission on section 1 on page 2 on prop. I'd like you to actually, through your chair, to try and streamline, make it just present it in a more simpler what you mean. I remember what IEC has said before us when they briefed us on the matter is that it's not always easier to say when is the next elections, for instance. but it, from time to time the president, the IEC will engage and the president will then announce whatever the case may be. But I wanted to check what SALGA is seeking to address in this case, so that we take that home when we engage on the matter. We can then be able to debate it further. What do you mean exactly by this submission in this particular section?
Thank you, Honourable Member. Your time for a rejoinder, Advocate Baikis.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, this was not a major one for us, just to clarify that firstly. It was simply to ease the tensions of planning, at the time when municipalities and other stakeholders do the necessary planning. It would, of course, allow more time for that. But the explanation is perfectly sound for why that cannot be the case. But we raised it as a concern that it would allow us more time to plan at local government level for those. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Advocate. No one of us on Robben Island is to say enige klachten en verzoeken, verdere klachten en verzoeken. Any further questions and complaints and requests? Honourable Member.
Yeah, Tebessin, I was a councillor for at least 7 years of my life.
Good.
And I remember we would ask SALGA to raise all these issues. Now we see where they raise them. But I understand the frustration on section. On the sections, under section, I mean the argument in terms of section 9, and all those sections that are quoted on page 2 and page 3, in trying to support their argument. And I would like them to speak succinct to that issue, so that we again take that home and assist us in the next, just to speak on your argument. Notwithstanding the submission that you've made on page 2 and 3. Through you, Jay. Thank you.
Thank you. Advocate Baikis.
Yes, thank you.
I must also understand the members at some stage will be debating this in the House. So they want to have all the necessary information when they make their presentations. So it's in that context.
Thank you, Jay. Yes, I think this, there are certain writers legally who have expressed an opinion on this and sought to provide the clarity, but it is, of course, it has no legal status. And we feel that this issue can be clarified in the legislation almost once and for all, because municipalities take different views. Some municipalities, some would say, act unlawfully when, for example, they start paying a councillor after a certain period when, in fact, the declaration of results has not emerged. So it's an issue of clarity that really we think can be... It's a simple matter to put it in legislation just to state exactly when a councillor assumes office. And the issue there that the members can take home to debate is that it's around the entitlement to remuneration. As a major issue, because the Municipal Financial Management Finance Management Act, of course, kicks in if there is unlawful expenditure, unauthorized expenditure by municipalities paying councillors who have not yet assumed office, in fact. So the issue there is that the declaration of results in terms of that legislation that we put in those several pieces does not coincide with the declaration in terms of Section 64. So I think it's a simple clarity that can be provided. Because in certain instances, the schedules provide that the commission determines the elected representatives, and in certain instances, the chief electoral officer. So it casts doubt on the process involved in the actual determination itself. So I think Section 64 could indicate that the declaration of results includes the determination of seats in accordance with the proportional system, and that would clarify the entire matter. Once and for all, rather than us doing it throwing legally. Some lawyers arguing this and others that it's when they are actually tax office.
Thank you, Advocate Bakis. Is there anyone who would like to comment? Independent commission?
Thank you, Chairperson.
Department.
I'm sorry. Those are one of the issues that we think it, really the Structures Act that deals with these issues, and it deals in totality with these issues. It even in terms of the Structures Act that the Electoral Commission must assist when councils elect their representatives in district councils, and those things should really be dealt with in the Structures Act, Chairperson. Similarly, as when we talk about who is entitled to be a candidate, that is dealt with in the Constitution and also in the Structures Act. And it's not for us, it's a part of the electoral system, and it's not part of the elections itself that are governed by the Electoral Act. Chairperson, I thought I'd just take this opportunity to express our appreciation of cooperation that we get with SALGA from on all levels. We attend conferences jointly. We interact on specific issues. SALGA has been of a tremendous assistance with us when we have to deal with municipalities for their assistance that they give us in our local offices and in elections themselves. And I was a bit caught offside by this, but what was put on the table here. And if we were amiss in not specifically consulting also SALGA on the draft legislation, that I would say that is purely an omission. It's not that we were ignoring them, because we are in constant cooperation with SALGA on all kinds of matters, and we appreciate their assistance very, very much. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Van der Merwe, thank you very much, sir. Any other further input, good folks? State law advisors, departments, it's your time to earn your living today. Giving you that opportunity so that the department is not engaged in fruitless expenditure. You'd like to say something, sir? State law advisor. Yeah.
I just want to make example for those things now that we also have members of the National Assembly as far as remuneration is concerned. For instance, Chairperson, you will get the elections and you will get the election results declared, and then you get the IEC designate members of parliament. That is the time, Chairperson, a member becomes a member, when he's designated as a member of parliament. Then, Chairperson, there's a period when then the members have to take an oath. They must swear in the house. Because, Chairperson, in the Constitution, it says that a member cannot start to perform his or her function until that member has taken an oath or been sworn in. So that member is a member, even though he's not yet been sworn. Then by the time that member starts to take a sworn oath after that, then that member becomes a member of parliament. You know, he's a member of parliament and he's entitled to a remuneration. But that remuneration, Chairperson, now is paid retrospectively to the time that member was designated as such by the IEC. That's what happens, Chairperson. This is the same that applies to members of the provincial legislatures. Then when you come to the members that are appointed to the LCOP, for instance, those members then are appointed most by their provincial legislatures to go to the LCOP. Then those members become entitled, even if a member, Chairperson, takes an oath of office after a month or 2 months, after that member has been designated, that member is entitled from the time that member has been designated as a member of parliament. Even if he started 2 months to 2 months down the line to perform his functions. So also with the members of the NCOP, by the time that member is being appointed by his provincial legislature, then that member, after he has started to perform his function, he becomes entitled to the remuneration. So when it comes to local councillors, as the Honourable Commissioner for the ICF said, that those issues are covered in the Municipal Structures Act. So one, I'm not privy now to the Municipal Structures Act chairperson, but one will also hope or presume that that is also applicable, because we've got this uniformity when it comes to the spheres of government, that members at the provincial, members at the local government level will become entitled to their remuneration when they are designated as such by the IEC. And those that are appointed by their councillors to represent them at the district municipal level, in that case, as the same with the NCOP, that will apply. Thank you,
Good folks, I thank you. We are all empowered by a revision. I've also been revised. So what remains for me to do now this morning is to thank all of you for having graced us with your presence. Stakeholders, particularly the delegation from SELGA, we thank you for your input, good folks. And I would also like to thank the honorable gentlemen from the department and also from the Electoral Commission. I'm told the gender component was given the morning off today. Members, I'm grateful for your presence. I know there are many portfolio committees that are competing for members. So I'm grateful to see you. Thank you very much. Eddie, you said you are not... What's your new title? Eddie says he's the committee secretary. He says it's no longer in the primitive days, 1994, when some of us came to this institution, when we spoke about committee clerks. So now and then he reminds me and says, no, Jefferson. I'm not a committee clerk, I'm a committee secretary. So the committee secretary will send out the notification of the next meetings, good folks, and then we'll all meet here. Unfortunately, the budget of a chairperson is a very lean and poor one. I can't offer you 11 o'clock tea. We'll have to make do with iced coffee and iced tea. You buy it from supermarkets, I give it free of charge outside this door. Thank you very much.